Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Isn't it amazing that the best way to have just resolved this whole thing would have been to just let these Nazis continue destroying their own movement?
They did a fine job destroying their own movement. Like, I remember Cantwell was all talking about how the alt-right or whatever was going to be on the rise after this Charlottesville thing that happened. What was it called? Unite the Right rally?
It was Unite the Right.
And really the whole thing just fell apart.
Well, it's certainly not on the rise. And
nope.
I can see why someone who intended the Unite the Right rally and, you know, felt energized by that whole thing because they're one of these alt-right people, I can see why after something like that they would think, oh, it's energized, it's going to be big now, but... In reality, it hasn't worked out that way. They immediately resorted to infighting, which isn't surprising. If you take a bunch of hateful, toxic people and you ask them to work together, it's just a matter of time before they're at each other's throats, because that's
sure.
What toxic and hateful people do.
Well, I mean, not only is it what toxic and hateful people do, and they probably do it a lot worse than normal, but I mean, every organization is subject to this. Every one of them.
That's true.
It's just a people problem where people that just can't get along with one another. I mean, I forget what the rule is, but somebody came up with one of those maxims or whatever that whenever a group gets larger than like 30 people, you start to have these issues where somebody else wants to take it over, or they want to run it their way, and then they get mad at somebody, or somebody sleeps with somebody else's wife, or, you know, there's always some sort of stupid, usually it's petty drama between people. The plaintiffs spent a lot of money, apparently, running this particular lawsuit on things like attorneys. Allegedly, many millions of dollars were spent just bringing this particular lawsuit. And so it's pretty clear that they wanted to punish these men for the actions that they took. And essentially, Chris Cantwell's position on this was he didn't plan anything with these people. But ultimately, this is a civil case, and so it's not a reasonable doubt that a jury has to decide on. It's a question of preponderance of the evidence, which is a much lower legal level of, you know, that you have to reach in order to find somebody responsible in this particular case. So whereas in a criminal case, if there's any doubt, you know, any reasonable doubt that so-and-so didn't do the things that they're alleged to have done, you have to acquit. But in the case of preponderance of the evidence, it's more like, and again, I'm not an attorney, so I'm probably not giving the best example here, but a preponderance of the evidence is, well, what do you think's likely? Here's some evidence. What do you think's likely?
I just always assumed that any jury trial was to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm-mm.
Wow, that's not good for the United States, considering how many civil lawsuits there actually are on all sorts of nonsense.
Cantwell was one of, like, two people representing themselves.
Well, that's encouraging, at least.
He, as I understand it, is facing like $750,000 liability on this one.
I liked hearing the comments about, you know, the prosecutors saying, or the attorneys for the plaintiff saying, this is not a podcast, Your Honor. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, he's Chris Cantwell. So, of course, you give him the stand and he's going to talk like he's doing an episode of his podcast.
Yeah, he did, including like saying words that he would say on his podcast as well in front of the jury.
I am not at all surprised by that, because I was in his studio. I was on his show a couple of times, and he had signs that were reminding himself not to say certain words all the time.
Yeah.
Attorney Roberta Kaplan said the plaintiff's lawyers plan to refile the suit so a new jury can decide the two deadlocked claims.
Oh, my God.
She didn't specify what those were. She called the amount of damages awarded from the other counts, quote, eye-opening, that sends a loud message.
Wow.
The verdict, although mixed, is a rebuke to the white nationalist movement, particularly for the 24 individuals and organizations accused in a federal lawsuit of orchestrating violence against African Americans, Jews, and others in a meticulously planned conspiracy. Jurors were unable to reach unanimous verdicts on two pivotal claims based on a 150-year-old federal law passed after the Civil War, which was meant to shield freed slaves from violence and protect their civil rights. The Ku Klux Klan Act contains a rarely used provision that allows private citizens to sue other citizens for civil rights violations. Under those claims, thank goodness they're going to explain it further, because that was not very clear, the plaintiffs asked the jury to find that the defendants engaged in a conspiracy to commit racially motivated violence and that they knew about the conspiracy but failed to stop it from being carried out.
So the jurors could not agree on that?
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
Which...
So what the hell claims did they agree on? I thought that was the thrust of the case. So what are the other ones? I'm hoping they get into it. Like, where the $27 million or whatever, the $750,000 for Cantwell, what were those claims?
Well, the jury did find the defendants liable under a Virginia state law conspiracy claim and awarded $11 million in damages to the plaintiffs. Jurors also found five of the main organizers liable under a claim that alleged they subjected two of the plaintiffs to intimidation, harassment, or violence that was motivated by racial, religious, or ethnic animosity. The jury awarded the plaintiffs $1.5 million in damages on that claim. It doesn't specify which one of the five organizers of the rally they're referring to.
The big question on Charlottesville is, well, what exactly was the evidence that persuaded the jury to find that, first of all, the jury would not find them, would not find the Nazis in that case, or the white supremacists or white nationalists or whatever. They're different people, right? They're 16 or whatever different defendants in that case. They wouldn't find them responsible on the two federal conspiracy to commit violence charges. But there was a, they did find them responsible for a civil charge in Virginia. So the federal charges, no. But for whatever reason, the federal court was able to hear the Virginia civil allegations, and they found them responsible of that, and that's where, you know, millions of dollars are being awarded as damages in this case. So looking at this story from NPR, the defendants tried to distance themselves from Fields, the guy that, you know, got convicted of murder for running into a woman in his car, in testimony, and said they engaged in violence only when they were attacked. They also said their language on internet forums and chat rooms was hyperbolic and protected by the First Amendment. And it should have been, because that's what the First Amendment was designed to do, is protect the ugly speech. James Kolnick, who was the attorney for a couple of the plaintiffs, said in his closing speech, quote, "The bravery of the plaintiffs and the horrific injuries that many of them suffered don't prove a conspiracy." I don't agree with the things that these people have to say, but I also agree with the idea of free speech. And I think that this is the intention, as they're saying, is to chill their free speech. And so I have to oppose these methods, even though I don't agree with the alt-right. I think they should be free to go to a damn protest and, you know, have it without having to fight with people that oppose them and then lose, you know, in civil court. I think this is pretty sick.
Not to mention some of them land in prison. What? No, I don't think Christopher Cantwell went to prison.
He went to jail while he was awaiting trial from Charlottesville. There were state level charges that were brought against him for assault or battery or whatever. And he took a plea deal on that.
And a protest that they had scheduled to gone to, and Antifa went there first.
Yeah, Antifa showed up with obviously the intention to get into something with them.
Because they knew it would work. I mean, some of the white nationalists went to jail and they all just got sued. Well, a fair number of them just got sued.
Yep.
Got everything handed over in a federal courtroom.
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly an attack on freedom of speech. And the thing is, you got to remember about free speech is they're going to come after the unattractive ones first, the ones that are ugly, the ugly opinions. Those are the ones that are going to get targeted. And so shame on this jury if, you know, unless there was actually evidence for a conspiracy to commit violence, then it sounds to me like they just punished these people because they didn't like them.
I remember when I first got to Keene years ago asking one of the business owners if they accepted Litecoin because I happened to have some. And the answer I got then was no. And I was like, okay, well, I'll flip it into Bitcoin Cash or something, which was very easy to do at the time because Shapeshift hadn't added their KYC requirements yet. If I remember
which
the timeline correctly.
They've now gotten rid of, by the way.
They have because they decentralized. Good on them
for
that.
Yeah, they're in the process of becoming a decentralized autonomous organization and getting rid of their corporation completely. And they've moved over to the Thor chain, which is a decentralized exchange where you can actually swap between what they call level one cryptos. So like Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash and Ethereum and if there's a few others. But it's pretty interesting. And so so the Shapeshift folks have actually embraced the decentralized structure and they've gotten
That's
rid
really
of KYC.
News.
Yeah,
I'm
That's my understanding, at least.
I always preferred them over Changely back in the day when I actually regularly shifted cryptocurrencies from one to another for whatever reason. Changely was misleading about what the fee was actually going to be because it wouldn't tell you the fee up front.
Oh, that's not good.
It would just add it at the end and you're like, oh, I didn't get as much Ethereum as I thought I was going to.
Oof. Well, Ethereum.
But, yeah, or whatever cryptocurrency. But Shapeshift would tell you at the beginning, hey, look, this is how much BCH you're sending. This is how much BTC you're going to get.
Yep. Somebody launched a website called the NFT Bay. And they put a torrent up with, like, all of the NFTs.
Nice.
They, like, right-clicked and saved all the JPEGs or whatever, and they put them all together in a torrent. So if you want to get every NFT that are available on, like, these different NFT selling sites out there, then you can now do that.
I love that because one of my primary criticisms of NFTs is that they are just a way of doing copyright without the government. And I don't support intellectual property. Even when it's not the government, you can't own an idea.
Yeah, I think that I'm of kind of mixed feelings about it. I think it's a craze, and I think that it is going to, you know, die away to some extent. But at the on the other hand, I think there are some interesting applications of it. I think the here's a JPEG of a rock or a monkey or whatever, that's pretty uninteresting to me personally. And why anyone would pay the kind of money that they're paying for these things makes no sense. But I think there are some interesting things. So like Quentin Tarantino, for instance, recently announced that he was going to do special NFTs of Pulp Fiction, like give somebody some unreleased clip or something like that. So if you So if you really do get something that's uncopyable, something that's never been seen before, like where I think Kevin Smith said he was going to release an entire movie to somebody, a movie that no one has ever seen before that he's making or made just for this purpose to whoever is the top bidder, they get the total rights to the film.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
I was listening to the episode yesterday. And as far as milking the toads, it's not illegal to have the toads. It is illegal to milk them, but I would not suggest people doing that. From personal experience, I've had pet Bufalvarius toads in the past, and I have milked them. And maybe other people know how to do it correctly, but I did a lot of reading on it whenever I was into that type of thing. And every time I did it, they would always scream.
Oh, wow.
And I did not like the way that they, I did not like the way that they acted. And,
yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah, I can imagine not. I mean, you're basically torturing, in that circumstance, you're torturing this creature so you can get a high, high off of its pain.
Yeah, just get the synthetic stuff. Be done
with
it.
That's what I would recommend. And yeah.
Now, before you go on, one of the questions we had last night was, is there a significant difference between normal quote-unquote DMT, just like freebase DMT or vape cart DMT or whatever, and 5-MeO DMT? Have you done both, and can you speak to that?
Yes. I've done various forms of DMT. I would say 5-MeO DMT, not only does it look different, like once it's dried out, because you do have to milk it, dry it out, and it almost looks like cellophane or plastic once it's dried out, but the effects of it, it's much more intense, but in my experience, at least, you don't even really get much of a visual effect.
There are these sort of fake characters on, you know, Instagram or wherever else. And but let me give you the story here from Beijing and Yahoo News reporting. Sporting neon hair and flawless skin, Bangkok Naughty Boo is one of a new, that's Naughty Boo, B-O-O, is one of a new generation of influencers in Asia promising to stay forever young, on trend, and scandal-free because they're computer-generated. Blurring the lines between fantasy and reality, these stars are hugely popular with teenagers in the region and will yield increasing power as interest grows in the metaverse, say industry experts.
What was the name of this influencer? Asian
Naughty Boo. Bangkok Naughty Boo. Sounds dirty, but no.
So these people know that this person is not real.
I presume they do know that. Quote, I'm 17 forever, non-binary, with a dream of becoming a pop star. Bangkok Naughty Boo, who uses they-them pronouns, said in an introductory video sent to AFP, created by fashion designer Adisak Jirakasim and his friends, who envisioned a gender-fluid persona to hang the ideals of the artist community. The character is one of a tribe of made-in-Thailand virtual influencers born from COVID-19 pressures. In September, Ai Lin made her debut. She was created after her agency became frustrated by the limitations of human influencers.
I'm calling about a movie that I saw this afternoon, and I was excited about it for a while because I'm actually a pretty big fan of the franchise. I kind of grew up during the start of it, but it's the new Resident Evil movie.
Now, you watched this today. I thought it wasn't releasing until tomorrow, based on...
Yeah, so all the posters... I actually don't know what the real day it was supposed to come out, but I do know some theaters opened it yesterday, and then a few more theaters had it today, and then I think the official opening day was supposed to be tomorrow, but I caught it today.
Okay, so when you say you're a fan of this franchise, do you mean the video games, or do you mean the movies?
I'm a fan of both of them, actually. Okay. Even the original movies with Mila Jovovich, who is smoking sexy, in my opinion. She just made the original six movies, in my opinion, and they were awesome because of her.
I believe she married the director of those films,
wow.
Paul Anderson, if I recall correctly. And so clearly he really loves his wife and, you know, wants to keep her going as a star and an action star. And they're basically just vehicles for her to be kicking ass in slow motion and looking awesome.
There were apps that you could upload your face and it would turn you into a zombie or whatever.
I don't know if you can say that wave has ever really stopped. I mean, zombies have kind of consistently been popular over the last decade plus. I mean, The Walking Dead is still being produced.
They were ubiquitous for a while, but they stopped being scary. But now I think they're finally starting to make their big comeback. I mean, I bet you're going to see way more of it in the coming months.
I don't know. I don't think that zombies have dropped out of popularity in the last decade. I mean, if you look at The Walking Dead as a series, it's still being produced. In fact, it is they're wrapping production on the original series. They went through they're going through 11 seasons, so they're on season 11 now. And
I've never seen a single episode.
It's a fine drama.
I'm sure it is.
It's a zombie drama, basically. Like a lot of the episodes barely have zombies in them. It's more of the humans, interacting or whatever. Because I mean, how much can you really do with zombies? They've managed to do a lot with them, but they also had two spinoff series now from The Walking Dead. So like, if it weren't continually popular, they would have kept it to just the one series, but no, they spun off and they did a show called Fear the Walking Dead, which honestly, the recent episodes of that has, in my opinion, was way better than a lot of season 10 of The Walking Dead. So that one's become a real good show. And I haven't even watched the other one, which I think it's called like The World Beyond or something like that. I don't even know what it's called. So there's so many spinoffs of just that one show. And then I think Zack Snyder just came out with a zombie movie a few months ago. I forget, The Army of Dead or something like that. Bonnie reminded me about a quote-unquote influencer named Michaela, who has been around since 2016. And when I pulled up the image, I like, oh, yeah. Because we have talked about this issue before. This isn't the first time this has come up here on Free Talk Live over the years. And Michaela has, a YouTube channel and presumably an Instagram. And
is this M-I-Q?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Lil Michaela?
Yep. And again,
this one is substantially more convincing.
But still, not really real.
Yeah, some of these, it's like, okay, yeah, there's something off here.
But she's got 277,000 followers on her YouTube channel, and
good Lord.
God knows how many
Instagram.
Oh, so
she's actually making videos, and I refer to her as a she, like it's an actual person.
Right.
Interesting.
And so as they point out here in the story, like this is, as far as advertisers are concerned, your normal human influencers, they're human. So they have issues. They might not show up to work. They might, get drunk and forget to do something they were supposed to do. They might have a scandal where they, send a naked photo of themselves to one of their teenage fans or whatever. These things have happened with some of these online influencers. The World Health Organization recruited Knox Frost, a 21-year-old AI universal adapter from Atlanta, to spread coronavirus safety messages to his 700,000 followers. In Asia, computer-generated pop stars, including Japan's Hatsune Miku and Luo Tiani from China, as well as virtual K-pop groups, Eternity and K/DA, have paved the way for newer, quote, stars as technology improves. Now, it's interesting that, you know, if you go back, we were just kind of talking about video games and video game movies a moment ago. Have you ever seen the Final Fantasy movie?
Which one?
I didn't know there was more than one. There was one that was released in theaters like two plus decades ago.
The Spirits Within,
yeah,
or
that
something,
one.
Right? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I've never seen that one because I just heard awful things about it.
It generally got panned in its reviews. I thought it was entertaining, but then again, I like the Resident Evil movies too. So, like, you know, don't look to me if you're looking for like a quality movie check. But I thought it was interesting, and for whatever its faults were, it was a completely 3D animated movie, which obviously wasn't original. I mean, Toy Story or whatever had preceded it. But it was different in the way that they were bragging at the time that the character that they had produced, the main female lead character, was like the most technologically advanced character.
You pulled up some sort of K-pop band?
Yeah, they mentioned a couple of K-pop groups, Eternity and KDA. Are computer generated, and I was like, all right, I want to see what this looks like. I like me some K-pop.
I wanted to kill myself every second that I was hearing
this
it.
Song is not a good K-pop okay, song, number one. This is actually probably one of the worst songs I've ever heard, and the video is terrible. The quality of the deep fakes is very poor. Like, they could do better than this, and they didn't in this particular case, but
well,
it's
going
to get better.
Presumably, they only have to, you know, convince little kids to buy the song or whatever on iTunes.
Yeah, and if you are dealing with, and again, going back to what advertisers want for buying a sponsorship of an Instagram influencer or something like that, you don't want somebody who's controversial. You want somebody who's not going to say things that are going to piss people off and cause a boycott or whatever. And, you know, with a K-pop group, they don't get older. So, you know, these K-pop producers out there constantly having to make new groups because girls are getting older and, you know, they want to do other things with their lives or whatever. And
that's so disturbing to me on a human level, though. It's like, I can't imagine how they could, even if they don't get older, how could they maintain any relevancy past a certain period, right? Because most bands don't.
If the influencer is actually making you a bunch of money, well, then you better believe that Nestle or whoever is going to give it a second thought. But if the influencer is just one of a dozen or 50 different, you know, people on Instagram that you've put your money into to reach their 1 million followers, then a million followers over here is the same as a million followers over here. And in fact, it's probably a better idea to rotate through these people than to keep on the same 12 of them or whatever. Like, if you've got a limited advertising budget and there's 2,000 influencers, well, you want to buy 20 at a time, right? And like, move around. So like, these people are throwaways. I mean, these companies, what was it? I was reading about one of these sponsors. They sponsor like as many of the influencers as they possibly can. It was like Bang Sodas or something like that, or energy drink. And like, they sponsor a bunch of influencers whose audiences are primarily under the age that can actually purchase the product itself. But nonetheless, they do that. And the point being, like, they've got so many of these influencers in their pocket. It's no big deal if they flush a few of them down the drain. Doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah, and that model has its own issues. I mean, that business model has its own issues. YouTube did something similar a number of years ago, back when I lived in Mississippi, where if you talked about certain types of things on your channel, then certain advertisers wouldn't work with you.
They wouldn't sponsor you, yeah.
Millions of children ages 5 to 11 are in line for COVID-19 vaccine shots.
Oh, no.
And many aren't happy about it.
Wait, they do that at, like, CVS?
Yes.
I didn't know
that.
Just
about any pharmacy apparently can give you a COVID-19 shot.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I saw it at Hennifer's today when I went to pick up a prescription. I was like, yeah, no, not still not doing it. I mean, that's super convenient, but I'm just not interested. And neither are these kids. These are not willing participants, said Beverly Schaefer, owner of Ketterman's Sandpoint Pharmacy.
The counter argument is most of the time kids don't want to get a shot. I mean, period. Anytime. They don't want to have their blood drawn. They don't want to get a shot. They don't want to go to the dentist. So, I mean, usually the parents have to make these decisions for their kids.
I could be unusual in that regard, but I don't remember kicking and screaming and crying because I had to go to the dentist. Or
no, I didn't care either as a kid.
Or a shot. So
it didn't bother me to get the shots either. Like, it was just a little pinprick. It was no big deal at all. But there are a bunch of kids who are, you know, little babies about these sorts of things. And that's the argument, right, from the parents is, look, it's my decision. I'm the parent. I take care of this kid. And I want him to get this shot, which I think is a terrible idea, mind you. I think it's absolutely horrible what these parents are doing to these kids, because your kid, if they get COVID, they're going to be fine.
Two parents forcibly restraining their child while someone dressed as a superhero injects them with a thing. That's not a good look. But they're advertising, like, look how hard this doctor is working. It's horrifying. The parents, the child is being tortured. Whether the parents view it that way and whether the doctor views it that way or not, from the experience of the child, that they're being tortured against their will. Mayank Amin, owner of the Skipback Pharmacy outside of Philadelphia, must rank near the top. He said he had a child crying for 30 minutes during the first days of pediatric COVID-19 vaccination. The sad scene gave him ideas for how best to stage a large-scale vaccination clinic. He organized one at a nearby school earlier this year and gave each child a color-coded wristband based on what parents said about the likelihood of their child throwing a fit. The screamers were directed to a VIP lounge so that even if they scream and cry, it doesn't scare the others. The clinic featured live music and jugglers, and the vaccinators wore superhero capes.
This is so, dystopian? This is so crazy.
The post-shot waiting room had a librarian reading stories, a magician, and the chance to write a thank you note to vaccine developers.
You know, have you seen any of the posts on social media with, like, the Clown World label on there?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is literally like, all right, kids, line up. We got vaccines for you. Here's the juggler over here, a magician.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.